How's it going today? This is the Revved Up Outdoor Podcast with your host, Zach Wozniak and
Chris Turbush. This is the podcast for you, the ordinary Joe, who simply just loves the outdoors, wants to get outside, and just enjoys it tremendously. This is for you.
So we just wanted to welcome you guys and thank you for coming along this journey with us. Hope you give us a listen and tune in weekly for the new podcast that we'll be releasing. All right, guys, how's it going? This is Zach Wozniak and
Chris Turbush.
And again, we just want to take a second to welcome you to the first episode ever.
Sorry, we're kicking it off. We're kicking it off in grand scale. Let me tell you, this is going to be the best podcast you will ever listen to this week.
We don't know if we'll ever even top the first one because, you know, it will be the most unpolished and, well, normal, ordinary podcast you'll ever listen to. Yeah,
who cares? But you know what we're about? We're about the outdoors. We love being outside. We love just getting out, introducing other people to the outdoors as well. And so we thought, why not share that passion that we have and try to share it with as many people as we can.
Yeah.
So that's what this is all about. It's you know, for those guys who may not have, 20 hours a week to spend in preparation and getting ready, don't have serious amount of cash, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it takes a lot.
The average Joe who just tries to, you know, get out and enjoy the outdoors, that's what this is about.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, it's, like we said, Revved Up Outdoors. It's, you know, we're both pastors. You won't probably hear about that as much in here because this to us is about the outdoors, but it is part of our life. So Revved Up, that's, if you want to know the meaning of kind of where we got that from.
That's right. We're both reverends. So that's why it's Revved Up.
They're a little revved up. That's why revved is not spelled the way you thought it would be. We did not misspell. We were just playing with it. No, but honestly, like you said, this is a podcast we believe for any and everybody that has a passion for the outdoors. Like we're not two professionals at this at all. But sometimes we like to think we are. That's an average guy thing, you know.
You know, when you're talking to your buddies, you sound like a professional.
Yeah. So
everybody says you sound like an expert.
Fish was this big for the people on video, not this big. Like it really was.
That's right. So if I sound like an expert to everybody else, I might as well put it out there so I can sound like an expert to all you guys. And you guys will probably let me know how much of a non-expert I really am.
Yeah, but honestly, we want to welcome you onto this journey with us. We are just figuring out what this is like. And we just really felt like we had some value to add to people that have a passion for outdoors. And that's anything from hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, honestly, anything. I mean, if you can think of it, we'll probably talk about it at some point, tell stories, share stories about it. And if we're not have no knowledge on it, we'll bring people in that do have knowledge and would like to share more wisdom with you guys. That's, again, we're here to equip people that, again, just have a passion for this and maybe don't have all the answers. We want to take it on to go and help find those answers for you guys. And so ultimately, just this is a conversation ongoing with not just us, but with everybody listening. So
we want to take this first episode and kind of introduce you to who we are. And so I'm going to ask Zach, why do you think people would want to listen to you about outdoor stuff?
I don't know if they'd want to listen to me. I just hope they will. I mean, no, honestly, I mean, it's something I've had a passion for a long time. You know, me and my wife have been blessed to do different trips out in different areas across the world. And we went over to New Zealand for a while and went over to Australia and got to see the different natures and everything out there and just grew a real respect for it. Kind of been in the outdoors my whole life. But again, it's the topics that we've talked about, the hunting, the fishing, and all that. But I think in the more recent years, I've grown a lot more to just want to really dive in and learn and learn something of value and weight that's worth to give out to others. And so that's kind of my thing. I say qualifies for me. I don't know if any of us are really qualified to do this or to teach and equip people on the outdoors. But again, I think we're willing to do the work to figure it out. So that's, I guess, if there was a qualification, are you willing to do the work to teach people? That's where I'm at. Now, I guess I'll turn it to you, right, Chris? With your passion for the outdoors, I know we do a lot of this together. We're not just talking together, but we actually get into this. But what do you think qualifies you and makes you excited about doing this podcast?
Okay, so I'm a Turbush. And one of my jokes with people all the time is that as a Turbush, you hunt. It's not a question of what, it's a question of just that you do. I mean, everybody that I know in my family goes hunting for something. I've grown up in the outdoors since a time I was an infant. I remember my parents tell stories of tying me on the boat so that way I wouldn't fall off the seat while we were out salmon fishing.
Gotta love that.
You know, and I don't know if I could even talk at that time, you know, and the same thing, going out in the duck blind, freezing cold as a toddler in the woods. I've always been in the outdoors ever since I was little. And so kind of growing into a passion and also just kind of growing into just kind of who I am. It's just what we do. We're outdoorsmen. So I guess, you know, I mean, living it gives you some qualification and being able to hopefully teach and share other people and get them into outdoors as well.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's one of those things, right? You know, you have kids, you know, you're at a different spot. I would say it's funny. We're only about 10 years apart in age. If you couldn't guess by the gray hairs, if you're watching us live, he's definitely the older one, but it's only 10 years. But it seems like at times, because you have some older kids, that it's like, it almost feels like a lot bigger of a gap. But in reality, you also have the little man. And how old is your youngest son?
He's six.
Six. So six, JC, 6 years old. And he's just now starting to show like a lot of big interest in outdoor stuff, isn't he? Like he's really been diving in a lot the last couple of years.
Yeah, he sees dad and big brother. Yeah. So my oldest son is 16, and he's been in the outdoors with me since he was an infant, basically. So my six-year-old is seeing that, and he wants to be like us. So we're getting him introduced as we can slowly and get him on the boat, get him fishing, getting him taking part in, you know, harvesting the deer and, all that sort of stuff. It's just a blast. So,
yeah, and if I could add something just real quick for just off the topic, but honestly, for anyone listening in, this will be always a PG, a very PG podcast. You know, there won't be – if you hear a cuss word, I'd be very shocked. If it might be from a guest, but honestly, I ain't going to promise, make no promise for other people. But this is something that I'd say too, like the journey of learning outdoors is something that it's a joy to bring the next generation on. You know, I know that's where we can both say we've learned is getting in tune into it by the people above us, our parents, our, you know, uncles and stuff of that nature kind of really brought us into it. And started showing us the ropes at a young age. And that's a lot of, again, what this whole – the fun of it is about. So if this is a podcast you're listening to, we just – I'd say, again, get with your – if you got a son or a daughter that's interested in outdoors, watch it with them. Listen to it with them because I think it's something that is cool that you guys could really learn some of this together and then put it and apply it, you know, in the seasons that are coming.
Yeah.
And obviously, we're going to be a little biased. This is – we're now exactly a month out from opener in Michigan for deer season.
Yeah, we're getting pretty close for us in Michigan. You could be somewhere else. You could be in a different part of the world or even a different part of America where some of you are archery elk hunting right now or have other seasons that have already opened. I know some whitetail seasons are either open or they open in the middle of September. Maybe you're already out in the woods and you're hunting, which is spectacular for you. We have to wait until October 1st.
Yeah. So with that, obviously you'll hear us talk about a lot more topics, but this time of year, I think you'll hear a lot more hunting just because it's what we're doing. It's what we're in. I know real quick, actually, before we move into, we have a topic, the first topic this year, I mean, this podcast, we figured with the opener on the rise, why not talk about moving into, you know, everything of just prepping for the season. But before we get into that, you actually just returned from a trip that would almost be, you'd say, like a trip of your dreams,
tell us
a little bit about it.
Yeah, so I just came back from Alaska. It literally was the trip of a lifetime for me. I never thought it would be financially feasible to go to Alaska, but it came up as an opportunity, moved some things around, and just made it happen. And so I spent a week in Alaska with my sister, my parents, and I brought my son along with me. So we just went wild. We went halibut fishing, salmon fishing in the Kenai River. We hiked over in the Kachemak Bay State Park. We tried to pack as much as we could in that week. Saw some beautiful, amazing things. We also went on a four-wheeler tour of the wilderness, which was pretty neat. frankly, was amazing. The only thing we didn't see that we wanted to see was a brown bear. I really was hoping to see one. I had never saw one in the wild. And we went all through the, I mean, we tried our best to see one, let me tell you. And never did see one, but had a great time.
Yeah.
Went and caught some big halibut and caught a few salmon out there. And just, I'm telling you right now, if you get a chance to go to Alaska, you need to go. So, but with that preparation and all the things, you know, so being an average guy, you know, I don't, yeah. I don't have the kind of time that some people might, you know, with my job, it can be kind of demanding. Maybe you have the same thing, right? Where you have responsibilities that you have to do. I have four kids, a wife who is loving and kind and gracious and lets me spend a lot of time in the outdoors.
This is brownie points time, by the way. This is for all the men listening in. That's a little tip.
Yeah.
Talk up your wife.
That's right. And anyway, so with going to Alaska, I thought it best to not spend a whole lot of time in preparation for the season. You know, there's only so many hours in a week that you can take away and from your family. And so preparation for this archery season, I'm finding myself behind the eight ball for preparation. Yeah. And you know what? I made that sacrifice gladly because I was going to Alaska, you know, and so there's things that come up in life where you just kind of roll with the punches and go with what you got.
So you shared with me, and we won't go too much into it because I think the Alaska trip in a whole week we'll cover on a podcast in general.
Yeah, that'd
just be the prep of what you did to get there and kind of what you needed to get, some stuff that you thought to buy, some stuff you realized when you got there you should have bought, you know, and so on. But I know we talked a lot about the halibut fishing, and honestly, you had some videos, and we may share some videos with you guys. So if you're listening in on like Spotify or Google or Apple Podcasts, I tell you, check out our Facebook pages. And you'll probably get some footage here, you know, shortly of just different trips we'll do, but, big time the halibut. Tell us a little bit about the halibut experience. This is something that actual mom. So this is, again, for those of you that don't know Chris, like I know him, his mom actually is an avid outdoors woman, I guess you'd say, like, right. She's pretty much one of the ones that you've done it with your whole life.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about halibut with your mom and you and the experience. And
yeah, I will say, so I grew up in the outdoors, and that didn't mean just with my dad. My mom was out there. We took part in it together. We food plot, we prep, we do a lot of stuff in the outdoors. So my mom, her bucket list was halibut fishing. And she had the opportunity this year to go halibut fishing. Kind of one of those trips where you know you want to go, and you know you may not have a lot of time later on to go, so you go right now. And so we had the opportunity to go with them. But so my mom calls me up. She's like, I'm going to Alaska. Help me find someone that I can go fishing with, a charter. So I did my research real quick and gave her a couple of options. And we picked a guy and decided that we'd go with him. He had great pictures, great reviews. And it definitely paid off because this guy, he knew what he was doing. We literally got on the boat in Anchor Point, in which I would give you some tips. So Homer is the halibut capital of America or Alaska or whatever. It's halibut capital. It's all of their songs. So we were staying in Homer. Anchor Point is just a little bit further down off the point. And if you go to Anchor Point, you actually drive on the boat less. You actually cut about 25 miles off from your trip on the boat. So again, found that out. We prepped that, planned that. We had a 32-mile boat ride. It took us an hour and a half to get to the fishing grounds, which was quite unique. We drove out there, sat down, anchored up. And as soon as we anchored up, as soon as we put the first line out, I think it took 2 or 3 minutes and we had a fish on. That's what I mean by do your homework, do your research, make sure you're going with people who are competent, good. And this guy was, and he knew exactly what he was doing.
And as he said, it is actual Homer, Alaska is the halibut fishing capital of the world.
Yep.
Actually. Okay. So that's, I wanted to make sure we looked that up, add that for you, but yeah, so that's a cool experience. Then you guys went out, right? So then you got out there, you found all the prep, you got out there, and how far was the boat ride?
32 miles.
32 miles. For some of y'all that don't, maybe, I mean, we're in Michigan, so we are the Great Lakes. We're surrounded by water. Yeah. 32-mile boat ride is kind of far, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. It was a tad bit eerie thinking I'm going out into the ocean 32 miles. It took us an hour and a half boat ride to get there. And it was kind of neat because he actually put his compass heading from Anchor Point straight to St. Augustine, which is a volcano on the other side of the Cook Inlet there. And so we actually went halfway there, which was pretty cool because you got to see beautiful scenery as you were fishing. It was pretty neat. So like I said, we got there, we sat down, we started fishing. And what we didn't know, so in my preparation, I either didn't find this or it wasn't written or something about the tides. So tide is your fishing is dependent upon the tides. Mm-hmm. Obviously from Michigan, the Great Lakes, we don't have a huge amount of tide difference that we would normally look at and go, oh yeah, up there, we picked one of the worst days for tide. It was a 21 or 22 foot difference from high tide to low tide, which was, I guess, quite insane. So when you're planning your halibut fishing trip, he told me you want to plan it on a quarter or a half moon or a new moon, which is no moon. So there's less tide. And what he told me is we had to use tuna rods, which was a short, really heavy, stout rod with a 4-pound weight. And 4 pounds is a lot.
Yeah.
And you drop it back and it would. So if you're used to like trolling, right? If you've ever been fishing and you would troll, it looked like we were trolling because the weight just went back at such a steep angle, like past 45 degree.
I remember even watching your videos and like I told you, you were showing me some of you guys bringing them in. I'm like, it looks like y'all are driving.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it did. It looked like you were consistently on a good flow.
And it wasn't. It was just the tide, but literally he had to put the boat on anchor and put the twin 200 Hondas in gear to keep us from getting pulled down out with the tide. And so he's like, you know, usually anyway. So what he said was if you go on a lighter tide, you could use lighter poles and lighter line, and you could actually jig for them because they're very active feeders, in which you would actually be able to fight the fish a little bit greater. So the first fish that I caught was right off the bat, and the tide was at the strongest point it was throughout our fishing trip. And it took me, I don't know how long, I felt like a sissy, like I was punking out. My arms were literally numb from holding on to this and trying to reel this in. And I'm like, this is a big fish. And he goes, I don't know if it is or not. I think it's just stuck in the tide. Completely foreign to me. So plan your halibut trips with the tide and with the moon phases. You will actually get a better trip and you'll have better fishing. Although I will say this, our charter, he knew exactly where he was going. He'd been fishing there for a little while and was doing really, really good. Literally, when we anchored up, we caught fish every single, there was not even a 5-minute span where we didn't have a fish on. I got videos of us catching 3 and 4 fish at a time, and there's 4 of us fishing. So frankly, it was amazing fishing. He knows what he's doing, even on a day when supposedly the fishing was supposed to be terrible. He put us on the meat.
So I guess shameless plug. I mean, do you know the name of the people that took you out charter? Or?
Catch a Lot. His name was Mike. Was the owner, and he took us out that day. The owner did, and Catch a Lot out of Anchor Point. It was a good trip. So I would definitely give him a shout.
If you plan a halibut fishing trip, again, we'll probably get into doing honestly like a whole episode on Alaskan fishing, because you got to do a couple different experiences.
Yeah, I did.
So we'll share some details on that. But I guess the moment we've been waiting for, we're going to move into our first ever topic that we've ever done, because this is the first ever podcast. Honestly, and like we said earlier, what better thing to talk about at this point of the year than kind of moving into prepping for the opener of whitetail deer season?
Yeah,
there's a lot.
I feel like I've been talking a lot.
And
I definitely I wanted to not talk at all, because I talk enough as it is in my life. I wanted to have Zach share with us. So Zach, what have you been doing to get prepped for deer season?
You know, it's funny. It's one of the things that we've been, I know, conversing about this last little bit, is it's been extremely difficult for some reason this year to really kind of be ahead of the game. Like we said, we are the idea of what average Joe is, and we don't have the resource, we don't have the time to really commit.
You mean you got to borrow a tractor to get your food box?
Yeah, like, I mean, me and my wife just bought a 25 acres a while ago. It's not the biggest. We're average. We're not your basic people with 200 plus acres of land that they're hunting and setting up. We just got, you know, a 25 acre setup, and we're right in the middle of farm fields all around us. So luckily that's a blessing, and we have a very heavy brush located piece of land.
You're a bedding area.
Yeah, 100%. And so they're to and from through it all day long. So we're kind of a natural, easy selection process, I guess. But so this year, yeah, I mean, usually, so we have not bought a tractor yet. I have a little lawnmower that doesn't do the work that we needed to do. And so we've had food plots planted already previous years. And this year I hadn't gone out into my hunt spot until honestly, probably like 3 weeks ago. I walked out and I came back and I actually told PC or Chris that I said, man, so I walked out. I said, you know, you can see clover. I said, but the weeds are about as tall as my head. I said, I can't get in through anything. I said, let alone I'm going to have to take a shot and expect my arrow to go through all this without actually getting thrown off. And so I started to get a little stressed out, not going to lie. Again, we're getting a little close to hunting season. So I pulled some strings. I got my father-in-law to bring his tractor over. He drove it all the way over from Dryden, the closest town, you know, where they're living, which is about an hour and a half tractor drive. He drove it over for me, and basically we got access, got out there, and I brush hogged the whole thing back down, got it set up. Actually made a couple entry trails to the food plot from, but I zigzagged them out going to the bean field. Reason for it, I've just learned over time, you know, deer will take the easier path, but they also love cover. So that's the point of the zigzag trail. And I'm gonna be honest with you, the main point of the zigzag trail has nothing to do with the deer. But I did not want to drag a deer through this weeds again. I've done it 2 years in a row.
It does suck.
And it gets a little harsh. I know you've helped me with one of them. Well, we had your son do a lot of the work. But that's the blessing of that. But honestly, yeah, so we just got, you know, did a lot of prepping for, you know, getting the weeds trimmed down, getting the openings built up. I'm actually planning to go out this week. It looks like this weekend we may get a little rain. So I plan to go out and just do a quick little seed over again, brush over it. And just hope something comes up. I'm going to be honest. It's been, like I said, very drawn back. But again, with a newer property, and it's an old farm field. It's been overgrown for, I don't know, man. I mean, years, 30, 40 years. And so it's turned into like just thicket. And it's about 8 to 10 feet tall thicket. And so with that being said, I've had to slowly just start grooming more areas and just choice hunting. We actually only have one real good set of woods on our property that's probably 50 yards by 30 yards wide, but it's an actual very good trail in and out for deer. It's a consistent pattern. And so it's usually not a pattern they follow until honestly around gun season, but it is one. We threw a tree stand up in that. And honestly, other than that, you know, I actually have a setup right on a ravine where I have a hunting blind and a big opening. And I had the whole food plot set up. Well, last year it was a tent blind on a scaffold. Right. And last year we had a couple. Remember the big windstorms that came in?
Average guys, what do you use for your blind? I got a scaffold. I'll put that up in the woods.
I mean, I'm a builder by trade, right? Normally that's what I've always done my whole life. And we actually had some scaffold out left over from that we were building our house with. And when we got done with it, it was just sitting next to my house and hunting season was coming. I'm like, bro. So I actually yanked her out there with my little yellow tractor and I actually snapped one of my lawnmower trailers. It wasn't made to carry the weight. Not a good idea. Don't listen to that.
But
like you said, that's what we're here for, like, right? The average Joe. But it's all like I was saying. I got that blind out. We got a couple big windstorms and last year, and honestly, this thing got shredded. I mean, every single part of it, it blew over. The scaffold stayed up. My chair's still on there. Good chair. Rhino blind's chair just sitting there like nothing.
It's like a rock.
Great shape, man. But I went out there, finally just cleaned up that area, and I'm like, man, I probably need to cut the blind down. Like, it's stuck in the weeds. So I just got that cut down. I'll be honest, still ain't got nothing up in replacement. But it's like we said, it's when it's said and done, average outdoorsman, you know, when you look at that, to me, it's doing what you can to get out in the woods, pursuing the nature And sometimes that doesn't look perfect. That doesn't look like something done the way you maybe would want it done. Honestly, like we've always would say, we really wish we had the time and the funds to do.
Yeah.
We know some of the amazing strategies, but honestly, we've had some amazing results. I know both of us have had with the stuff we do. So that's a little bit about where I've been on my preparation so far for.
Well, have you been shooting your bow? Is your bow ready to rock?
So honestly, you know, I did. Let me see if I can pull this up and I'll put it on for you guys real quick. I went out. I pulled it out the other day, 3 days ago, first pulled it out. And I was doing, you know, I have to have a little trick shot thing going on. So I pulled out, I taped a water bottle onto my target and I put it on a slant. And I said, basically, the goal is you got to shoot 5 arrows and you got to get them all in the water bottle before the water drains out. So if you're smart, you start at the top of the bottle and work your way down. So this, I'll see if you guys can see it on the live, which you kind of can, kind of not. But basically, yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was just enough to test me out. The water bottle started falling. I was getting mad.
Was that the crossbow or was that the
Was the vertical. I was walking out just slinging arrows, man. Crossbow, we don't test out. Just crossbows, and we just walk out and shoot.
She's ready to rock, huh?
But so with that said, like again, for just plotting the land and getting everything set up on that end, getting cams up. I've had cams up for probably about a month now, a little over. And for this year, actually, I've had a pretty good, a couple of pretty good 8 points and somewhat not mature, but some good sized deer. But as we know, we're not scared to say in about a month when hunting season starts, they may be nowhere near there.
Yeah, you got your trail cams up, right?
Yep, trail cams up. I've been tracking, putting down different beacons to follow through on Onyx or even the other one I use, which I don't remember what it's called, HuntWise, you know, just to track some different stuff of where I've spotted them, where they're going, the directions. But as we know, a lot of that, as much as that's a good thing, it's sometimes the deer outsmart you. Yeah. So, but now I'll turn it to you, right? When it's said and done, it is a new year. What has your outdoor preparation been like for whitetail?
Honestly, it's slightly embarrassing. I haven't done a single thing. I
gotta love the honesty.
I haven't even stepped in the woods. honestly, I haven't. I mean, we've been busy. There's been a lot of stuff going on. And like I said, there's life. And you just can't carve out the time you'd like. I got tree stands that I got to fix because the straps have worn out over the last couple of years. I got one that's in the tree. But it's only in the tree because it's like wedged in there. It's not actually in the tree.
The tree has became the tree stand.
Yeah, because I know that's horrendous. I'll probably get somebody saying, if anybody actually listens to this, I'll get comments on how stupid and lazy. Yeah, I get it.
Hey, but honestly, the biggest part is, again, if you're listening to this podcast, I can almost say there's no way you're sitting there not saying, you know what, brother, me too. I have not even been in the woods yet. I'm there with you.
Yeah. So, and I haven't shot my bow yet, which you'll learn I am an archery guy. I shoot my bow generally throughout the year all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this year has been crazy. Haven't even lifted it yet. Maybe on another podcast, I'll go through and explain the process it took me to get this new bow that I got last year ready and how insanely stupid it was. But
yeah, because you had quite the fun last year.
Was horrendous.
Opener was coming and you were stressing out pretty hard.
I haven't done anything.
So it's September, right? It's September. Yep. September 1st.
Yeah.
In Michigan.
Yeah.
Whitetail starts October 1st. And you haven't stepped in the woods. Now, for, again, the average guy that's listening in that's probably sitting there saying, crap, we're a month out already? Like, I haven't even thought about that. What – is there hope to still shoot a deer in bow season? Or are you just – is the season a wrap? Did you already screw it up before it started?
I would say no.
Oh, so, okay. Tell us why.
I'm 38 years old. I've been hunting since – I was allowed to at 12 years old. I've done a lot of this. Generally, deer patterns don't change from year to year. It depends on which property you are on with food sources. Usually bedding is standard for year to year to year, unless hunting pressure changes, which last year, if you're like me and you noticed an uptick in hunting pressure last year, let me know, because I saw
100%
so many people hunting and it was really, really annoying. But I guess they have a right to hunt too. But I think it was because of COVID. They had time off of work, which is great. You know, more people in the outdoors, that's great. It just messed with my hunting. So what I mean by that is, if you've been hunting in years previously, first thing you need to do is get out in the woods and check. If you have an existing tree stand, check your existing tree stand and make sure it's still safe. Now, make sure your straps are not weathered and make sure they're not broken. Be smart.
So real quick, I would just ask, right? Because we know who, again, we're talking to guys like us and maybe even a little less seasoned. What is a, if you could describe, what is it not safe? What is some signs of not safe stuff on your tree stand?
Oh my gosh. I used to hunt sketchy stuff all the time. Again, being average, I didn't have a lot of money. I was hunting hand-me-down tree stands. I was hunting like homemade crap. I mean, is that okay to say?
PG, it's still good.
Still PG. I mean, okay. So for me, my idea of safe could be a tad bit different than some. You want to look for your straps. Are your straps weathered? If they look like they're weathered, they look like they're old, and they're getting some moss growing on them, definitely replace that stuff. You should actually take your tree stands down, like at least every year, if not every other year, to reset them so they don't grow into the tree. That's important. So if you have existing tree stands, check them, maintain them. Do a quick walkthrough. Hey, is my spot still a good spot? Are there still deer coming through there? Has anything changed? Has more people moved into the area and maybe changed the deer patterns? Just do some precursor look around. You still have a month to make adjustments. The other thing I would say is so if you don't have existing tree stands, all right, and you're going to go out in the woods and you say, hey, I just want to go out and shoot a deer this year. In Michigan, I've learned to lower my standards. I used to be the guy that was, I got to go out and set up for the biggest deer possible. I still try, but I know that in Michigan, the reality is it's probably not going to happen, guys.
Yeah.
It's very, very rare. I know they get shot every single year, and I know most of the people that I talked to have shot a good-sized deer. It was kind of happenstance. It was mostly luck. There were a few of them knew that they were there, and they were after them, but anyways, so you can still go out in the woods, do some looking around. The first thing I would tell you for early season, the best success I have is just simply looking for bedding, food, and water. If you can find a spot that has bedding, food, and water in a concise area, and you can see deer traveling and moving around through there, that's where you want to be. Early season, your major food sources are going to be crop fields. Generally, once the leaves turn on your beans, the deer will no longer eat them. But right now, if like you're doing the early season, the early doe season, if you have access to a bean field and your beans are still green, that's usually a really good spot. Find inside, outside corners in those areas. Find the spot that is browsed the most. In other words, you look in there and you see where it looks like it's been eaten on the most. That's usually where the deer are coming out the most. And that's where they're going to start. And it's like start from there and it continues to go through. That's a good indication that's where the deer are primarily coming in and out through and eating in that area. That's their safe zone. You can move in there and hunt there.
Yeah. And one of the things too, you know, I feel like you see it all the time with the bedding areas, you know, their prime area to set yourself up to be able to get them in and out big time in morning and evenings, get them coming out and coming in at the different times, but also be cautious, right? Because the thing about bedding areas, you don't want to disturb it too much. You just put too much disruption on that bedding area, your mature bucks will stay away. They'll start to notice your presence. So like you said, it's good to get out now.
Yeah.
You still have a little bit of time. Get out now, observe them. Once you know where they're at, kind of mark them, you know, and then kind of let them be. I know, like I said, this, I have to deal with this a lot because a lot of my property is, the whole thing's a bedding area. Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, I have to be very cautious on when and how I approach certain stuff. Just because I've watched when I do approach it a little too much, or I get a little too close, too often to their bedding area, you will start to kick them out. Now, again, if you are a public land hunter and not a private land, honestly, it might sound ignorant, but your bedding areas, get on them, you know, get right there, get close enough that you're not disrupting them from in it, but that you can hunt the crap out of that in and out.
Yeah. So I was just speaking for generals. Like, yeah. So I would say there's more advanced. So if you want to talk more advanced, we can definitely go into that. But like, so find your food source, identify your bedding. You can, many times you can do that off of a map. You can identify your bedding on a map.
Google Maps or satellite.
Set up between the food source and the bedding on the heaviest used trail, you're going to see deer. Yeah. Okay. And so what I usually do, like for instance, I have not had a chance to prep this year. I haven't had a chance to go out in the woods. I'm going to go on history. I hunt the same properties. I'm going to go on what the deer have done previously. Go in, set up an observation stand. Go in, set up, look, see if there's deer coming through the area. If there's deer coming through the area in the same ways, then I know I can begin to narrow in my focus and get closer and closer and closer. I usually take a safe approach to start the season off with. The second one I would say is simple. If you're out in the woods right now, identify oak trees. If you don't know what an oak looks like, Google it. The leaves are unique. You should be able to identify what an oak looks like. When you identify the oak, find the oak tree that's carrying a lot of acorns. Deer love acorns. And what I usually do is as soon as I can, I go into the woods and use my ears. If I hear acorns falling, I'm going to not sit where I wanted to sit before. And I'm probably going to go to those early acorns that are falling because that's where the deer are going to go. I did an early season hunt one time back into a new wood. So I was doing my approach, getting closer and closer. And as I walked in, I wanted to sit in this new area. And as I walked in, I began hearing acorns falling. And as I heard those acorns falling, I immediately stopped, turned, and went over and hunted over that. I had six different bucks, ranging from 2.5 year olds to 1.5 year old bucks around me from, I think it was like 4 o'clock until like 7 o'clock when I was 7 o'clock. And eventually I shot the biggest one because, again, I'm an average dude and I know I'm not hunting for the biggest deer anymore.
Think about acorns too. Acorns, I look at as it's like our dessert. Right. To deer, it's dessert. It's you've gone out, you've done your eating for the day. They're starting to move back in or move, you know, in. They're coming into the woods. They're getting ready to find some bedding down. And then they're like, I found me some good old snacking. And then you'll see them. They as they move back in or moving out, it's either one or the other. They do. They'll slow down by like the trees with the oak trees. And they'll start to graze and just on the crunchiness of the acorn. And it's hilarious because I've had deer walk up, like you're saying, the falling of the acorns too almost helps you out because you're allowed a little bit more movement. And I've had times when they've approached the acorns and I'm moving and all of a sudden they're falling, but I'm moving and I've gotten away with it. But the beauty is too, is it almost throws the deer off, right? Because when you watch them, they're moving through and all of a sudden they're like, oh, food. You know, it's like their radars kind of go away from you as much for a second and move towards the doggone dessert. It's like almost like, again, you're a Culver's fan for ice cream.
Oh, heck yeah.
Be like, if we just ate a good dinner and we're driving by, you see a Culver's, you're like, oh, what? You
know? Give me that concrete mixer with peanut butter sauce
right, and
Oreos. I'm all over that.
But again, like he said, I mean, so bedding, we're looking for food, we're looking for movement. Like we were talking the other day, you know, it's good to get out in glass. A lot of the areas we hunt, it's not as, I would say it's not as effective in some of them to get out in glass because the hard part is with the difference of from this time right now, it's currently 80 degrees and sunny to about a month now, it will be closer to the 70s and 60s and cooler in the evenings at night.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you can go glass a field and you can glass up a really, I mean, every year right here where I'm at right now, I glass up 140, 150, 160 inch deer, like constantly. And I'm like, yeah, you know, this is good, great year. And then they disappear. 2-3 weeks before season starts, they're gone. You never see them again. You have no idea where they are. You don't hear that they get shot. They disappear. So glassing is another good tool you can utilize right now. Driving around in those bean fields, finding areas and asking for permission, that's a great way to do it. But just keep in mind, just because you glass them there doesn't mean that they will be there come hunting season. Sometimes, and many times, yes, but many times not. It kind of depends on where you are and the pressure and the location. Deer change, deer move.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of times, like we were talking, I have a lot of the opposite problem around this time of year. I usually, my hopes are getting very down. I'm moving into bow season. I usually don't see much bucks, and if I do, they're young. But for some reason, out of the blue, usually come rut, you know, the beginning of November, last couple weeks of October, all of a sudden, boom, it's like something snaps, something changes. And for some reason, too, I've been lucky. November 7th, the last 2 years in a row, it's basically middle of the rut. I've walked out, and all of a sudden, boom, here comes monsters out of nowhere. And it's been a blessing. But again, yeah, like he said, it's so easy. This is one of the easy things to do. If you're blessed enough to have property surrounded by roads, right, where you can drive almost the full access of that property, get out in your car and go for an evening drive or an early morning drive and just get out and start watching.
Take your kids.
Take your kids. Yeah, this is something, again.
Get some binocs.
Get some kids out. And even
they actually think it's fun. I'm not kidding. Right. If you've never thought about it before, take your kids. Even drag your wife out there and say it's a date night.
Get her some coffee if it's morning.
Get her
morning,
some Culver's, you know, or whatever. Yeah,
get some ice cream.
And you can sit and you can talk and you can drive around and you can glass. It's a great, yeah. It really is, honestly.
And yeah, honestly, just get out though. I mean, these are one of the things I'll say, right? For the average outdoorsman or the person that just has never really gotten into hunting, but has like that passion to really want to do it big time. I think we've seen a lot of that in this last like year or two because of the quarantine and all that crap. But ultimately it's so, if you build it up in your head that you got to do all these big things that you hear about, right, you'll never probably do it. But if you just realize there's some simplistic things you can do to prep for deer season and get yourself in the woods and get your kids in the woods, get your family in the woods.
Contrary to popular belief, you don't need to invest an insane amount of money to get started. You don't even need a tree stand if you're afraid of heights. You can shoot deer from the ground. It happens. I've done it many times.
But that's where, like, again, I'm just saying, move yourselves out. Get out in a car. Go wander around and watch your fields around you. Watch the different hunting areas. If you know deer coming in and out, just get set up there and just watch. And a lot of times when I was a young kid, I used to just go out. We had a property that we were hunting. I'd just go and I would just sit down in a bush and I would just watch the pattern of the deer. How do they move in? How do they move out? What trails were they using? And what was causing them to stop? What was causing them not to? And like, again, it's something that's simplistic. You don't want to make it too big of a deal, but you want to make it fun. And when you look at it, when you have kids that you're trying to bring into this environment of the outdoors or just bringing yourself into it, the easier the better. I'd say like you said, if you don't have the stuff, the fancy stuff now, you know, I've even more personally moved into more earth tone stuff anyway. I've gone away from, I mean, some of this camo is ridiculously priced. And in Jesus' name down the road, we'll actually have a line of camo out that will be for the average Joe, the low priced quality.
Yeah, we're gonna
good quality, but low price.
Like we'll call it blend in bush.
Yeah, we'll sell it at Walmart, you know. But no, honestly, because that is the biggest thing. Go get you some earth tone clothes, make sure you're warm, but get in the woods and go learn what it even is like to have like that moment, right? I always think about it every year. When you're sitting on the ground somewhere, you know, you don't have the stuff to get in a tree or you don't have a blind to get into, but you just picked a spot on the ground and you get lucky. And here comes, even if it's Bambi, right? Spotted little baby deer, whatever it is, they come walk right by you from like arm's reach away if you're hitting good enough. Okay, you gotta be quiet, you gotta be good. But that first moment that you have the deer walk up by you and your heart just starts pounding, you're racing, you don't even know, and the deer don't even know you're there. And that's the experience that I guess we would say is so important. And if you haven't got out, you just got to get your, like he said, get out. No matter what it is, no matter what you need to do, get out and get in the woods. And I tell you, like, preparation, one of the best ways to prep is go act like you're hunting. Leave the bow and arrow behind. DNR will find you. But you don't want the green slacks coming to look for you. But ultimately, get out in the woods, bring some binoculars, get some earth tone, some camo on, and just go and start that experience and start to watch the animals. And I think you'd be surprised on what preparation that is alone for you as the hunter getting your mindset ready, but also for you as the person trying to learn how to hide from an animal. And then getting to watch their motions and the way they interact with you and the surroundings, right?
That's definitely key. So, yeah, just because you haven't gotten ready yet this year doesn't mean all is lost. I guarantee
still can make it.
I guarantee I'll see deer. I guarantee I'll probably shoot me some deer this year. Just don't think it's too late. Just take little steps now and begin to get prepped.
And honestly, it's like you said. I mean, when it's said and done, there's every year there's always been more I wish I would have done. But there's every year when it's said and done, I'm just grateful I ended up getting out. You know, I'm so grateful when October 1st comes, I'm in the woods or a couple days within that. So don't let it stop you. Just be able to pursue it. And then we're going to move to a same topic. But honestly, one of the easy things, we talked about finding hunting spots. We've talked about kind of checking your gear, making sure everything's set up and ready. We've talked about getting set up way in advance, kind of getting set up last minute. One of the things I would ask you, right, for the hunter that has his own property, for the guy that's maybe like me that just has a bunch of brush, but he wants to hunt it, and he wants to bring deer in, what would you say? I'll give some, but you give some first. What are some key things to you for setting up a food plot that will provide for bringing in deer?
Oh, goodness. That's a good question. You got to have the equipment. So we tried, we tried the rototiller method, and that sucks.
The hand tiller.
It's a
lot.
You can do it, but man, does it work? And if you're going to work up any size property, so food plotting, first decide whether or not you have access to the actual ability to do it. They got this stuff called throw and grow. You still got to prep the ground. I mean,
yeah, you gotta get rid of the cover.
I mean, it's September 1st. You should have had it planted by now. You're getting late in the season. I would say maybe think about getting prepped for next year for food plots. I don't know if I would probably be going in right now and trying to get a spot ready.
Yeah, you don't want to cost too much
for a food plot, to be honest with you. But I mean, in general, you get your ground prepped, you get your soils tested so you know what you got and add what you need to add to the soils. There's all kinds of formulas online that you can look up. Seed companies will actually help you on being able to figure out what will grow best and in what different areas and climates and also in what kind of soils. So just kind of do a little bit of research. We can talk about that, I think, more.
Yeah, we'll go more in depth on that. But I know, like, for me, a couple of things I try to take note in is, again, looking for ways to create your own almost natural entries and exits, right? Making sure they have a natural funnel of cover, right? That's a big thing. I know a lot of people get in and will butch a whole area, and that's, you're just hoping that these big monster bucks will walk right out in the open. And half the time we've learned that just doesn't work that way.
They stick to cover. One of the things we've noticed too is if you have a great big open area, the bucks will stay in the thick and look out into the open.
And you'll get mad.
Yep, and you get mad.
But it's, again, like one of the biggest stuff. So like I said, create a funnel. And usually what that is just if you are clearing brush, give yourself a line of brush that you keep. And I usually look for the berry bushes. Them are the ones I usually keep because
autumn olives.
Yeah, they love it. They snack on them. But again, I even try to leave a little bit of bushes throughout just so they have cover. They feel safe. Honestly, I have a set about 6 foot wide of bushes that are about 6 foot tall as well, right in the middle of my food plot. That's the same spot I've shot two deer so far out of there. They've walked in and they've turned right around it and they stood there and pow, it's a 20 yard shot. But again, I'd just say for food plot, like you said, you're almost to the end. If you have an area where you're blessed enough that the ground is clear, you can still, I'd say, get out there and do some throw and grow and just pray that that tends to come up really well.
I've had very good experience
with it.
Another good one is if the farmer left the field fallow or if it was a winter wheat and they're not planting it this year. You can always ask and say, hey, you can go in there with a rake, prep that soil, throw yourself some throw and grow, and you got yourself a small little food plot. May not be the best, but I guarantee it will bring deer in.
Yeah, one of the things I just want a little nugget I'll throw in there is, honestly, you'd be surprised what those conversations can turn into. I think a lot of times we avoid reaching out to people, right, like and asking about permission and stuff of that nature. But I know as I'm surrounded by farmers, some of the they actually, it helps them more than you know. And as long as you can be open and honest, have conversation about, you know, hey, I, like you said, hey, I noticed you guys ain't growing anything currently. Deer season's coming. Do you mind if I just throw a little bit on the edge of this field? Or what would you be willing to, would it be okay, I guess, in your mind, if I was to do any of the above? And just have these conversations. One, the relationships you'll breed out of it are amazing. And two, again, you'll realize you're actually doing each other a favor. They're helping you out and you're helping them.
That's right. A fallow field sometimes is very can be very beneficial for the farmer if you actually plant some sort of a sugar beet or radishes or something along those lines.
Adds nitrogen and nutrients.
Because it actually can break up the soil depending on the soil content. You can talk to the farmer and say, hey, what if I was to buy some seed and we planted up this particular little area and you actually provided. There's all kinds of options out there. You'll never know unless you ask.
Yeah.
He may look at it and go, yeah, I would love to do that, but I don't want to buy the seed. Winter, winter.
Yeah.
You know, you got yourself a winter food plot and you can shoot deer off it all fall long or all winter long.
No, definitely. I mean, other than that, I mean, again, we're moving into the new season, new deer season 2021. It's a crazy year. It's been crazy. I don't know about you guys, but I am super excited to get out in the woods, get some peace of mind. And just enjoy, for me, I'll enjoy time with the Lord. I'll enjoy time with just nature, taking it all in. I know we look to every year try to get in as many new areas as we can.
Yeah.
Just to jump in and experience it, right? Learn. I think every time we walk onto a new property, you get to learn so much because you got to almost redo all of this all over again. You have to re-scout something that you've never done. Which is, you turn into a little kid again.
It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, there's nothing like an October morning, sitting in a tree stand when the sun comes up, birds start going nuts, animals start going nuts. It's something you look forward to every single year. Or it's that sunset when you're sitting there and the sun's going down, it gets quiet and beautiful and just, it's what I look forward to every single year, getting prepped and ready for that. I'm excited for that.
So, I mean, I guess ultimately too, this has been good. This has been the first episode of, again, the Revved Up Outdoors podcast. I keep almost forgetting to say it. So there we go. The Revved Up Outdoors podcast. This has been episode number one. And honestly, we're just stoked that you guys would even be willing to listen and just tune in. And I would say ultimately, we want to one, say thank you for joining us if you've been tuning in. But ultimately two is, again, this is for the average Joe. What we see out of this is, we're willing to do some of the research or find some of the people that have knowledge and expertise in the areas of interest that we're all trying to learn and get better in. So if there's anything that you have, you're just looking for an answer on, or you want to know more about, feel free to comment on any of these or message us directly or email us at revvedupoutdoors@gmail.com. And honestly, from there, we'd love to just do what we can, do the research or get the people, like we said, to just come on in and give us the best equipped answers to help bring you, the average Joe, and us into the woods or into the nature and have a better outdoor experience, right?
That's right. Yeah. Thank you for joining us and hope you're as revved up about the outdoors as we are.
Thank y'all. Have a good one.